cut off a finger. Infection, cut off a finger. It's in the bones. But that didn't stop it. And so they wound up taking the hand right about there. And they're just trying to do the best they can. Because, you know, doctors do what they can. They do the best they can. The hand didn't do it. They wound up going up to here. Didn't do it. They went up to here, which is just horrific, right? And she's laying in the hospital and she's in pain. And what happened is she wound up dying because they missed a systemic infection. They were looking here and here, but they missed that overall there was a systemic infection that they just couldn't get. And finally, it just stopped her. It took her. Sepsis or whatever it was, it took her. They made a mistake. And what they did in making that mistake is they wrongly diagnosed the problem. And if you don't get the problem right, then you can't apply the right solution. Doesn't that make sense? Right? That's just kind of, that makes sense. When you don't understand the problem, you apply the wrong solutions. Years and years ago, because I'm an old guy, hang with me, we went to plastic and styrofoam. Do anybody remember why we went to plastic bags and to styrofoam? You guys remember why?
Save the trees.
Save the trees. We were doing it for the environment. Now what are we doing? Going back to, yeah, killing it. Now we're going back to paper. Because we're saving the environment. If you don't understand the problem, the solution you apply won't work. So we said, hey, we got to go to plastic. Plastic's the future. It's awesome. Yeah, it'll be there in the future, too. Like, it'll be there 1,000 years, 2,000 years, still there, except for that Kroger bag that busts every time I pick it up. I swear to, they're making those things so thin. Anyway, if you stop and you think about electric cars, and I'm not trying to be political, I'm not trying to make a statement, please, please, please hear my heart. But if you go to, hey, we got to go to electric, have you stopped to think about how much we put into making a battery for an electric car that's only going to last a certain number of years and then it's got to go into a landfill? It can't be recycled, it ain't going to be reused. And the slavery that is producing the minerals for that thing? If you don't understand the core problem, the solutions you apply aren't going to work. They may even exacerbate the problem. It's weird, man. You feel like we're living in a bizarro world, right? Nothing makes sense anymore. I like hanging out with you guys because then I get a little bit of normality, I get a little bit of normality, a little bit of like, this is real life, this is good. How you live. And here's what we said. I need to remind you, stay with me. I need to go through a couple of things just to set up where we go today, because we're going to do Genesis 3 and Romans 1. And when we do Romans 1, immediately you think about the sexuality. That's not really where we're going to land today. We'll hit it, but we're going to move on from there. We've done that before. But let me set this thing up. We've said that how you live is predicated upon what you believe. That's why it is vitally important to seek and to know the truth above all. And you know how you know truth? Not cognitively, so I can memorize a verse. I can say, okay, God is sovereign, God knows best, yeah, and then go do my own thing. That's not what I mean. When I say no truth, what I mean is I learn that I can trust him. That's faith. I step out in faith. I trust him. He shows up, shows out, and I say, oh, I can trust him. Wednesday night, watching Josh Rutledge over at Liberty, he told the story. He is a true story. He's at a T-section, so he comes to the end of a street, there's a stop sign, and then there's traffic going left and right, and he wants to turn left. Now stop and think, you're at the stop sign, traffic here, and you want to turn this way, you want to turn left, so you got to go across two lanes. Well, he's trying to do this and trying to do this, and as they're coming up over the hill, he can't hardly get back. He said, look, honey, you go, you look your direction, I'll look my direction, you tell me when it's clear. The traffic starts to clear out a little bit his direction. Now, if he turns this way, another car could come real quick. So he's looking this way, and she says, it's clear. And he said, I took the turn, and it was clear. If he stood there, stopped there at the stop sign, didn't go anywhere, does he really trust her? If he went like, okay, I guess it is clear. He doesn't trust her, he trusts him. Only if he takes that move and says, I guess she knows what she's saying, and he takes that left, does he really trust her? This is how you know Jesus. He says, this is my way, it's best. You say, but I prefer. He says, this is my way, it's best, it's in my word. Okay, I'm going to trust you, Lord. And then he shows up. And the thing is, God made you. He knows exactly how you're supposed to work. He knows the ways that are best. In fact, God, honestly, God defines what's normal. Our culture doesn't define normal. I don't think they know what normal is. You and I don't define normal. God defines what is normal and normative based on how he made us. And so I follow God. I learn that I can trust him. He shows up. He shows out. And he reminds me that his truth leads to our best. Now, let me remind you of where we've been so far, just to kind of catch you up. 2 weeks ago, we said there are five responses to culture. This is from Niebuhr's book. I need to do this quickly. Christ against culture. So in that scenario, culture is ultimately incredibly evil. And if you're hyper-fundamentalist, you just separate off from anybody who is part of the culture. You don't hang out with them. You don't talk to them. You don't have anything to do with them. They're dirty. You're better than them. That's one response to culture. It's not our response. Another one is the Christ of culture. Culture's good. Culture's amazing. We just embrace it like it is and hang out as Christians. That's progressive Christianity. Whatever culture says is good, we're for. Whatever it says it's against, we're against. That's not biblical Christianity. That's a moving target if you've watched our culture over the past several decades. The third one is Christ over culture. That's churchism. The culture's basically good. We just need the church to kind of come alongside and interpret for the culture where they need to go. That's moralism. That's churchism. We're not there either. And then the last two are this. The Christ and culture paradox. Two kingdoms. So you live in this kingdom, but you're a citizen of another. The Bible says that we have been transferred from the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of the Son he loves, or his beloved Son. That's where we are. Listen. You don't belong to this world. You love it. You live here. You love the people in it. You live here. You got property here. You pay taxes here. You vote here. But this isn't ultimately your world. You're an ambassador. You're an alien and stranger, it'll say in 1 Peter. You're Gershom. You are somebody who lives here but doesn't belong here. That's where we stand, and that's biblical. The fifth one is Christ the transformer of. The idea that if we just get the right people, listen, because this is some of you, we just get the right people into the right offices and make the right laws that everything will be perfect. How many of you believe that? Because I need to pray for you, because you are. We're not going to get the right people in the right. We've done that before, have we not? How did it go? I was good for a few years until the next president came along, the next politician, No, our faith is not in politicians. Our faith is in Jesus. There's nothing wrong with advocating for, with wanting what is best. But if you get the right people into the right offices and they make the right laws for a lawless people, what happens? The lawless people do what they want, and the people who are not lawless just lose more freedom. Oh, I know we went heavy quick. Stay with me. Because here's the thing. If you don't understand the problem, you won't apply the right solution. And I believe that there are some of us as believers, as followers of Christ, we really believe we can just get the right people, the right office, the right. No, we can't. We don't believe in dominionism. Because the problem is not the right people, the right offices, the right laws. The problem is the fall, sin nature, people who are bent away from the things of God. And no laws or politicians in the right place will fix that. All right, so that's just to remind you to catch up. The gospel is this again. You'll need this. This is just catch up. Stay with me. Creation answers this question. Who am I and why am I here? Well, I'm made in the image of God. If I know Jesus, I'm a child of God, adopted into his family, and I am here to bring glory to his name, because as I do, it will be in my best interest as well. It will lead to a life of purpose and fulfillment. You created nothing that gives me more pleasure than you. That should be a song. Secondly, the fall answers this question. What's wrong? When I look at culture, nobody looks out at the world and says, this thing is perfect. It's awesome. Dude, take off your Disney glasses. This ain't awesome. This is not that. Right? There's a lot of brokenness. So the fall answers the question, what's wrong? Well, everything has fallen, and even my own nature inside me says I want to do things contrary to the way God created me and what he wants for me. Redemption is the solution. Jesus comes, dies on the cross for your sin and mine in our place. And when our faith is in him, his righteousness is transferred to us. Our sin is transferred to him. He takes it to the grave. And he sees us as perfect and holy in his sight. Oh, he knows the sin is there, but it's forgiven. It's under the blood. That's redemption. He buys us back from the slave market of sin. And then restoration is the trajectory as you follow Jesus. He begins to restore what he originally created and wanted things to be. So that's gospel. And so the God who created you designed you in a specific way. And he alone defines what is normal, good, and right. And here's the fall. You have the freedom to walk away from it. Jesus doesn't stop you. Listen, church, if Jesus doesn't stop people from walking away from what he created, we don't get to do that either. We get to love. We get to point to Jesus. We have no call on us to make our culture moral. Now, to advocate for kids, to watch out for victims, to want what is best, absolutely, it's part of blessing our world. We have no call. Let me do it this way. The guy that you work with who is stealing from the company and he's the boss and you got no one else you can tell, you have no call to make him moral. You can say, dude, I don't know if that's in your best interest. Something's going to happen. It's not good. You have no call to make him a nice guy. The guy who lies to his wife or the girl who lies to her husband, you have no call to make them moral. You can say, dude, I don't think it's going to work out well. There's this Jesus. He loves you. You can do that. You have no call to make your culture moral. You have a call to live Jesus before them and introduce them to Jesus. Because if I make somebody moral in one area, all right, I'm not going to lie to my wife anymore, but he doesn't know Jesus, then he's a moral guy who still dies and goes to hell. The goal is the gospel of Jesus Christ. Have I lost you yet? Have I offended you yet? It is always my goal. So let me just see. So we're free to choose, but we're not free from the consequences, though, of our actions. And so it works out this way. You got somebody who, let's say, on social media, causes drama, posts something that they know is going to cause drama, and they get pushback, and then they get all insulted and upset, and they block people who give them pushback, and they say, and then their next post is, I hate drama and people who cause drama. Dude, you are it. That's the consequences of your actions, genius, right? We're free to make our choices. We're not free from the consequences of our choices. The guy who is stealing from the company, it ain't going to go well for him. The guy who's lying to his spouse, the woman who's lying to her husband, it ain't going to go well for you. We're not free from the consequences of our actions. All of that is set up. So when I approach life knowing what's wrong, which is the fall and the sin nature, I apply the right solutions to the right problem, and I wind up glorifying God with my life. So let's jump into Genesis 3, and I'm going to have to move fairly quickly, although up here I'm moving kind of slowly. My back's a little sore. God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Now, an image is a mirror. It reflects. We're supposed to glorify him by acting like he would act if he were walking the earth. Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over. Dominion over, rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the heavens, over the livestock, over the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. Like God in that we have dominion over, stewardship in that we do it to his glory under his ownership. So God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Men and women, equal in that we're both created in his image with innate worth and value. Not one better than the other, equal. At the beginning, both created in his image, equality and gender. Now, when it comes to the roles, we're different. I'm never going to give birth to a child. Not going to happen. I mean, I've eaten some food where it's looked like I've come out of Golden Corral, and Brian, you're about 5 months along. I know, but I'll never do that. We're different in our roles, and that's an okay thing. God bless him. God said, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, subdue it. Made in his image, commissioned to fill the earth, subdue it, put it under our control. We don't belong to the earth. The earth belongs to God, and we manage it under his stewardship. And have dominion over the fish. He says it again. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the heavens, over every living thing that moves on the earth. Again, dominion. Why? Because I'm an image bearer. You're an image bearer of our God who owns it all. We're given stewardship to do what God would do with what we're given. So who am I? My identity is this. I'm an image bearer. My identity is not my money. It's not the way I look. It's not my interest in hobbies. It's not my relationships, my sexuality, my gender, even. My identity primarily is this, image bearer of God. And if you've been saved, born again, if you've accepted Jesus, I'm a child of the living God, adopted into the family, no longer a slave of fear. That should also be a song. So is everyone else. They have innate value, which means the people I disagree with, people that maybe I hate what they're doing, that I would be doing if I didn't know Jesus, respect, because you're made in the image of God and Jesus died for you. That's the hard part, right? And so God makes man, and we're going back to it because we went through kind of the summary. Now, here's the actual particulars. God makes Adam, man. He says, it's not good. He's alone. I got to make somebody to be with him. Adam's there naming the animals and male, female, male, female, male, female. He looks like just one of me. Wow. And so he makes the woman and he creates her and he brings her to Adam. And Adam, he gives her to him and their gifts to one another. And Adam literally breaks out into song. This is poetic in Genesis. He breaks out into song. He says, "This at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh." He's been missing something, right? He's been missing her. He's made for relationship. "She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. She's like me. She's one of my kind." That should be a song too by NXS. But differently, she's different in really good ways. And then God says, therefore, based on the creation, based on the fact that they're different, based on my making them this way, they're made for this purpose. "Therefore, a man will leave his father and mother," authority structure created by God, "hold fast to his wife," new authority structure, new family structure, "and they will become one flesh." That's God's purpose in creation and in differentiation of the sexes. That's God's purpose, that we would become one flesh, separate, well, one flesh in marriage. That's God's design for marriage. I don't know of another one. I'm not casting stones. I'm saying for those of us who call ourselves followers of Christ, there isn't another one. There isn't. It's repeated by Jesus in the Gospels. It's repeated by Paul and by Peter, that formula. "Therefore, a man, for this cause," some will say, "a man will leave his mother and father, hold fast to his wife, they'll become one flesh. And the man and his wife are both naked and were not ashamed." That's less about clothing. I get that clothing is there, but it's really about intimacy and transparency, nothing to hide. Oh, wouldn't that be nice? Nothing to hide, completely open, no fear of being made fun of being betrayed, of being hurt, of sharp words, just openness, intimacy. That's what we were made for. That's what it was in the beginning. He said to the woman, this is the enemy coming. God said, "You can have every fruit of every tree. Enjoy, man. I got like a spacious spread. It's all good. That tree there, leave it alone. Just don't do it." And the serpent said to the woman, "Did God actually say you shall not eat of any tree in the garden?" I'm running through this quickly because we've got to get to something. Did God really say that? He distorts the word in a mocking way. He knows God didn't say that. And the woman said to the serpent, now Adam had the knowledge, but he's not speaking up. He said to the serpent, "We may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden," or she said, and God said, but God said, "You shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the garden, neither shall you touch it, lest you die." And then she adds to the command, but the death thing that was in there, the day you eat of it, you will die spiritually. The serpent said to the woman, "You ain't going to die." Did God say, you know what, it ain't true. Ooh, that has never changed. To this day, the word is distorted and then denied. God's lying to you. He's holding out on you. God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be open. You'll be like God, knowing good from evil. He's holding out, and he's right. They will, from the evil side. And if they hadn't eaten, they would have known good from evil from the good side. Either way, they would have known. God's holding out. He's refusing to give you the best. So watch this. Watch this formula. When the woman saw that the tree was good for food, lust of the flesh, that it was a delight to the eyes, lust of the eyes, and it was desired to make one wise, pride of life. 1 John says that all that is in the world, every temptation that would lead you astray, that you're not supposed to love, is lust of the flesh. It all boils down to that. What will please my flesh, lust of the eyes, what I can possess, and pride of life. What will make me feel good about myself. And those are every single temptation you face will fit into one of those three categories. It was there at the beginning. So she took its fruit and ate. And she also gave some to her husband, who was with her, but saying nothing, passive man, still a sin, to this day, and he ate. Now here's the thing, he had the command. God had told him, he told her, she heard it from him. We know that because she repeats it back. And he says nothing as she's in the midst of getting ready to. Because men aren't meant to be passive. We're supposed to be the ones who protect our household, who watch over. Not in a I'm above you way, but in an I care for you, I love you way. We're supposed to be protective. And so when God calls, who's he going to call? Who ate first? Eve. Who's he going to call? Adam. Because he had the command. That's headship. He is responsible for what comes into that family. So Adam has a choice to make. Once Eve eats, he either is separated from Eve because she has fallen into sin and he's with God, or he's separated from God and he's with Eve. Because once sin enters a relationship, there is always some type of separation. It is the death of intimacy in a relationship. And so he makes his choice, and he is now separated from God. Then the eyes of both of them were open. They knew that they were naked. They sewed fig leaves together and made themselves loincloths because innocence is gone. And now there's shame and there's guilt and there's hiding and there's intimacy that has been ruined and transparency that's no longer there. And the things you, listen, the things you experience in your relationships, there's their genesis, there's their start. And they heard the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And the man and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God among the trees of the garden. But the Lord God called to the man and said, hey, where are you at? He knows where he is. He's calling him out. And he said, I heard the sound of you in the garden. And I was afraid because I was naked and I hid myself. It's kind of like the kid who gets caught eating the brownies, got it all over their face. Did you eat the, mom walks in and says, did you? I didn't eat any brownies, right? It's just like he's outing himself. I knew I was naked. He's outing himself. Well, who told you you were naked? Have you eaten of the tree of which I commanded you not to eat? He already knows. He's just calling him out. The man said, the woman. You know that woman you gave me? So basically, it's kind of your fault for giving me her because she's defective. She's a bad model. I need a new model. That's where that comes from. She gave me fruit of the tree, and I ate. The Lord God said to the woman, what's this you have done? The woman said, well, it's a serpent that you put here, and he deceived me. I ate. Turns to the serpent. Serpent's like, oh, crap, I got nobody to blame. And we're going to skip a little bit. The Lord said to the serpent, I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your offspring and her offspring. He shall bruise your head. You shall bruise his heel. This is called the Protevangelion. Don't have time for it. This is Genesis 3:15. It's the first announcement of the gospel. In other words, at some point, Christ's heel is going to be bruised. He's going to go on the cross, but he's going to crush Satan's head when he arises from the dead on that third day. That is the beginning. So before we ever had the problem, Jesus already had the cure. And the problem is the fall. The cure is Jesus. The problem is the fall. The cure is. The problem is the fall and the sin nature. The cure is Jesus on the cross and his resurrection. And there is no other. And everything comes from that. To the woman, he said, I'm going to multiply your pain in childbirth. In pain you shall bring forth children, and that sounds mean, but here's what you need to know. That pain is a gift. She's going to treasure that child. She is made to be relational. That is who she is. I don't know if you know, you guys may have never noticed, but your wife probably talks a lot more than you do. I know you probably never noticed, especially during the end of the movie, but I'm just saying, or at the best part of the NFL game, but I'm just saying, she is relational. She is meant to be relational, and she will connect with that kid in a way you never will. This is a gift. She is going to treasure and cherish that child because, man, she knows what it took to get that child to this earth, to this planet. It's a gift. She needs to connect. She's made for this sort of thing. She's made to cherish and connect relationally in a way that, honestly, we just can't as guys. Our brains are even different. We talk gender. Listen, our brains are different. They don't work the same. They do the scans. We're different. She is much more emotionally tied to our world, and this is a gift. And guys, listen, she's a gift. You need her. You do. Your desire shall be contrary to your husband, but he shall rule over you. There's going to be conflict in marriage. And his rule, by the way, is meant to be authority for serving. That's what authority is for. Jesus said, the Gentiles rule over you and exercise authority, not so with you. You want to be the greatest? Serve. Wash feet. His authority is to serve. I got to move. I can't do this. To Adam he said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it, because you weren't the man I called you to be. You were passive. You weren't protective and caring and watching out for. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. In other words, Adam, what you build is going to war against you. You're going to fight against it. This is a gift to sanctify you, to grow you, to mature you, to teach you to trust me. Because he's meant to be a builder. That's who he is. Men are meant to build, to grow, to help things become. By the sweat of your face you're going to eat the bread, till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken. For you are dust, and to dust you shall return. So he's made to cultivate, to grow, to build. That's who men are. To form, to fashion the world according to truth and virtue. Remember, go, fill, multiply, fill the earth. He is meant to listen, to form, to fashion, to build according to virtue and truth. That was God's original design. And he will. It's in his nature. And if I don't do this in terms of forming and fashioning my family in a way that honors God, helping my wife become who he created her to be, helping my kids become who God called them to be, helping my church become what he wants it to be, helping my workplace become a place where there's truth and there's love and there's acceptance. And if I don't do those things, I'll just spend my time leveling up on video games, because I'm going to do something as a man that is about building and forming and fashioning. That's what we're supposed to do. And yeah, it's going to war against us, of course. Relationally, we're going to butt heads. But I'm still called to do these things. And when I do, I'm fulfilled because I'm glorifying God. I will do it either in a way that glorifies God or in hobbies and video games and owning people in arguments, which is fun, and all the rest. The core problem in all that we face in our world is the fall. Sin nature, temptation, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. And if we don't correctly identify the core problem, the solution we apply will only make things worse. I'm made for intimacy. I'm made to be known. But I'm a guy, so I don't want to use my words. No, I'm fine, baby. I'm good. Don't worry about me. I'm good, right? If I give myself over to lust, I will frustrate the very desire for intimacy that God placed within me, right? The very desire for intimacy can be frustrated by lust and lead me the wrong direction and cause me to wall off to my wife so that she doesn't know me at all. I frustrate that desire by glorifying God, glorifying my flesh, pleasure outside of God's will. I'm made to build. She's made for relationship. If I refuse to build, it slowly destroys my soul. As a grown man, I was out of work for a little bit of time. I had stopped pastoring, hadn't found a job for a bit. I had about a year and a half period where I was out of the ministry, taking time to heal. And I didn't have a job. It about destroyed me. Can I just, any of you guys ever been out of work, grown men? You know what that's like, what that does to you? Oh, it just about ended me. If I refuse to build, it destroys my soul. If she refuses to connect, or if she can't, it's incredibly hurtful to who she is as a person. We fulfill our roles when we do what God created us to do. As I'm busy building, I need somebody to root me back to the center of why I'm doing it. As she is busy connecting with me, she needs somebody to point back to, yeah, but we ultimately connect with God. We are gifts to one another. Marriage is for your sanctification, because it's incredibly hard, isn't it? It ain't easy. I love it when somebody's young and doe-eyed, and, oh, we're going to get married, and everything's going to be perfect. Oh, that's cool. That describes day one. What you going to do on day two? When y'all argue about where to eat on your honeymoon. Yeah, it's going to be fun. And as a culture, and I've got to do this quickly, I really don't have time, we have moved from minimizing consequences to applying strong solution to misidentified problems. What I mean is, we used to minimize consequences. So God created, and again, this is, I'm not looking to create walls with you, but God created sex between a man and a woman within marriage. And so as a culture, we said, well, we want to minimize the consequences of sex outside of that. And so we want you to stay protected, and we want to create abortion. And at one point, we still had kind of a Christ consciousness within the nation, and we said, one of our presidents said, we want to be safe, legal, and rare. We don't even say that anymore. We've now gone to shout your abortion and be proud of it. What kind of culture are we living in? So we've gone from Christian to post-Christian to anti-Christian, and that's where we are. And you need to know the culture in which you live. We have misidentified problems, and we're applying strong solutions. And so if you say, hey, I just don't feel like I fit, and I'm just a tomboy, or I'm just a little sensitive as a guy, we're now saying, well, then you need to change your gender. And I got to tell you, man, the pharma industry loves that. Oh, man, they're making bank. Hospitals love that. Counselors love, they're making bank off of this. Have you looked to see how much they make off of one person who decides to change gender? As if you can actually change the way your brain works. Hey, you can be a sensitive guy and be an amazing dude. I've got some friends. I've had friends over the years who are sensitive and more artist-like. Hey, incredible guys. They're still men. I've known girls that are incredibly tomboyish. My wife is an all woman. She knows how to build a shed. She does. She built our back fence. She built our screened-in porch. My goodness, man, you give her enough time, she built us a new house. I just would miss her all that time because my body's all broken and hurt. We're applying strong solutions to misidentified problems, and if we do, we cause hurt and pain. And that's what's going on culturally. And the reason I tell you that is, listen, we're being discipled by our culture 24/7. And if you don't apply truth, you're going to wind up going along with the culture and refusing to say anything because you don't want to be a bigot. One of the most hateful things you can do is encourage people in that which will destroy them. We're not called to do that. So Romans 1 is a great picture of our salvation and the problem of our world. I've got to do it very quickly. We're going to run through this thing. But I want to camp on one or two places, just very, very quickly. Paul says, I am not ashamed of the gospel. It is the, what is that word? It is the what? Power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. It is a power of God. The power of God for salvation, the word for salvation, does not mean ticket out of hell and that's it. Power of God for salvation. Salvation has to do with safety, with deliverance, with health. It's more than just a ticket to heaven and a ticket out of hell. It is a power of God to radically reorient who you are, to take you out of the kingdom of darkness and into the kingdom of the Son he loves, to adopt you into his family, to change you, to give you a new nature, to place his spirit within you. It is life-changing. This is the gospel that changes everything. Everything. In fact, if you can come to know Jesus and you're the same, you haven't come to know Jesus. Now to him, the Bible says, who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to the power that is at work within us. Power within us. You have the power of God within you. And I'm leading towards where we go next week, but you need to know this. Man, you're not third string sitting on a bench, and man, that pastor over there, or that missionary, or that super Christian. No, we're all the same. We got the same power. You got it living within you. And some of us are walking in sin because we don't think we could ever break out of it. You can't. Jesus can in you. You don't have to live in that. Oh, but I fall. Yeah. But you don't have to stay there. I got you. Get up off your knees, get back, and start walking again. Paul is praying. He says, I pray that you may know, the eyes of your heart may be open, that you may know what is the immeasurable greatness of his power toward us who believe. Believe, take steps of faith as he leads. Believe, trust him, according to the mighty working of his strength. And I would say that some of us keep falling because we don't take the steps, trusting that he will meet our needs. But you're saying, I could never do this. I'm saying right now, don't do this. Walk with him. Watch what he does in your life. Don't do this. Walk with him. Watch what he does in your life. Don't do this. And you keep turning, trusting that he says there's no traffic. And watch what he does in your life as he shows up and shows out. He'll change you. And the thing about sin, the thing about walking in these things that are part of fallenness, is it will slowly corrupt us and we don't even see it happening. I smoked a lot of dope. Not yesterday, but when I was younger. Not yesterday. I know you're wondering, but when I was younger, I did. I'm trying to figure out the right way to say this. I became one heck of a jerk without ever seeing it happen. I'm not saying if you smoke pot, that's who. I'm saying that's who I became, but I never saw it happening. I just did. But it was slow as I was constantly getting stoned and constantly thinking about me and how I can get more. And doing other drugs as well. I never saw it happen. People who are addicts are jerks. I'm sorry if you're an addict. I'm just saying you're a jerk. You don't even know it. Your family does. Your friends do if you have any left. Any of you former addicts would say I was a jerk. You know what I mean? Yeah. Been there. That's what sin does, is it makes me very self-centered. And as I put that away and I walk with Jesus, it's slowly making me who he created me to be. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. His divine power has given us everything we need. I don't even see like a way to parse that out. Everything means everything we need for a godly life through our knowledge of him who called us by his own glory and goodness. That knowledge, take the turn, steps in faith. That's the knowledge as I know him experientially and he shows up. For I'm not ashamed, for in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. So it's a power of trusting God. Trusting is found in action. Turn. Okay, I'm good. I need to continue on my personal device. There is an apple with a bite out of it on the other side of this. I'm just saying. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, that is, as it is written in the gospel, the righteous shall live by trusting God, by faith. It is action. Now, I need to do this very quickly. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who, by their unrighteousness, suppress the truth. They know the truth. They know that there is a God. We're going to get there in a second. By all of nature that has been created, they suppress it by their actions. They don't act on what they know, and so they act on other things, and because of that, they suppress the truth that they already know. I don't have time to tease it out. For what can be known about God is plain to them because God has shown it to them. Where's God shown people who he is? His invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and his divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. Look at nature. Nobody looks at nature. Nobody stands at the Grand Canyon, as a preacher I listened to says. Nobody stands on the edge of the Grand Canyon, tiny little person, huge Grand Canyon, and thinks, man, I'm awesome. Doesn't work that way, right? We look out and we go, wow. This is, you go up on a high mountain and you look out and you go, man, this is amazing, the majesty. And then you think of the universes upon universes. There's a God. We all have that. We have that innate in us, that knowledge. We've never found an unreached people group that was atheistic. Ever. You have to be taught that. There is a God. He says, so they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they didn't honor him as God. They didn't give thanks to him, which is the natural response of understanding who God is. As you honor him, you give thanks to him, you worship him, you proclaim his value. But they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. The natural response of seeing God is worship. And we're going to worship. The fallen people will declare the worth of something else. Those who don't know God, I'll declare the ultimate worth of my drugs or of another person that I've invested in or of my money or my ego or my looks or my... As a follower of Christ, the ultimate value is Jesus. And all those other things pale in comparison, and they're only worth anything to the degree that I can glorify God with them. Claiming to be wise, they became fools, exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. This is idolatry. Therefore, God gave them up. God gave them up. This is the scariest form of judgment. Stay with me. The scariest form of judgment is not when God sends hellfire and brimstone. That's over. It's when he gives you up and says, you want it, have at it. The restraints are taken off. You can have everything you want because we're not free from the consequences of our actions. God gave them up in the lust of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves because they exchanged the truth of God for a lie, which is, I can be happy outside of him. I know what's best. And they worshiped and served the creature rather than the creator, that's idolatry, who is blessed forever. Amen. By refusing to act on what they knew, by choosing the fruit rather than the good command of the creator. For this reason, God gave them up to dishonorable passions, or women exchanged natural relations for those who are contrary to nature. Again, giving up. And so, that was natural. You have a bent away from the things of God. They went that direction. The men likewise gave up the natural relations with women and were consumed with their passion for one another, men committing shameless acts with men, receiving in themselves the due penalty for their error. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. That's the third time you read God gave them up. That's scary. You never want God to say, have at it. No more restraint. No more knowledge of what's right and wrong. You just have at it. You never want that. That's a seared conscience. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetous, malice. I'm going to go quickly. They're full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They're gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, and rootless. Look through that list real quickly. What doesn't look like it belongs? No, through that list. That is the list of social media. In fact, that's just my account. No. What doesn't look like it belongs? Yeah, you got this whole list like they're murderers. Oh, and by the way, they don't listen to their parents. What? Here's the thing. Disobedient to parents. That is an authority structure created by God. We saw it in Genesis. The idea that as before I'm married and create a new authority structure, I listen to my parents. I submit to them because they know what's best and they want what's best for me under original creation the way it's supposed to be. The idea is I'm my own authority. I'll tell what's right and wrong. I'll decide. And that's where we get, I'm my own authority. I'll retranslate Scripture because I don't think it really means that, and it never meant that. You know, that word only got there in the 1950s, and nonsense. I'll find people who believe like me, and I'll just follow them. Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but, oh, wait, Christian, listen. They give approval to those who do. You know what that means? None of us get off the hook. I don't get to go, I'm so glad that you guys just, I don't get to do that. Oh, I'm so happy for your relationship. Oh, no, you ought to become a, I don't get to do that. I do not get to give approval to that which hurts other people and God calls sin. I don't have the authority, I don't have the right. I can love the person, I can point to Jesus, I don't get to do that. So it goes from idolatry, let me serve the creature, let me follow my passions to depravity, and it always follows that pattern. I've got to move, I don't have time for this. Our fallen world won't acknowledge the Creator. It never will. You shouldn't expect it to. So the solutions won't fit the real problem, which is fallenness and the sin nature. Idolatry leads to depravity. And the faith preserves, restrains. We're salt in the culture. We're preservative. The less Christian America gets, the more you're going to see the darkness. And is that not what we're seeing right now? And immediately we want to say, we want to go back to where it was 30 years ago. Let's just decide that we're going to make more laws and make people more moral. Hey, listen, advocate, vote, I'm with you, pray. Don't put your hope there. Unless God changes the heart, the person isn't changed. And more laws just make more people more lawless. So there's more evil. There's more preying upon. We're no longer shocked that some school teacher is a pedophile and has a bunch of child porn on his computer. We're no longer shocked. That's normal now, right? Or that pastors, youth pastors, people in ministry are preying upon people. We're not even shocked. That's just normal. The less Christian we become, the more you see evil within our culture. And make no mistake, listen, this isn't a question of whether or not it's wrong. It is evil to cut off a young girl's breasts and give her testosterone. It's evil. It's not a question. It's not a moral quandary. It's not a, well, maybe. No, it's evil. It's wrong. God created you this way. If we need some counseling for you, let's get you some counseling. It is evil to give him estrogen and have him form breasts when he's a young kid. That's evil. And when it's adults, fine. Do what you want. God hadn't stopped you. When it's kids, it's just straight up evil. It's still evil, but it's the only way to escape the discipleship of your culture, which is where we are right now, and it's discipling us daily. I know what I can and can't say. I'll be with folks. We'll be at a coffee shop, and they'll drop their voice as they talk about certain subjects because they know they're not supposed to talk about it in public. That's scary. The only way to escape the discipleship of your culture is to identify the problem, know the solution, and understand his power in you. Fallenness in nature, got to deal with me before I deal with anybody else. And when I deal with them, it's humbly and just simply pointing to Jesus, because I'm not called to change anyone. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. It's the power of God to salvation, changing the whole person for everyone who believes. That's the hope. That's the answer. The correctly identified problem is the fallen sin nature. And the only answer is Jesus. That's it. So when I see something that approximates revival, regardless of what you think, man, dude, if you're wanting to worship and pray and seek God, I'm applauding. I don't care if it's not done perfectly. If that's what's happening, wasn't there, don't know. But I'm applauding. The righteous shall live by faith. It changes how we live by God's power. The problem, well, I keep falling. And the solution is not this. Well, try hard, make up for it. Well, God, I'll read the Bible more. Give in to sin? No. Feel guilty? No. I'm a second-class citizen. I guess that's just who I am. No, no, no. All of that looks like humility, that I'm just a second-class citizen. It isn't. I keep falling? Well, what lie have I believed? Well, I believe that he or she in my life should be like the person in that movie, that Hallmark movie. Dude, they got scripts. I'll never be like them. It's never going to happen. Or it's about me. Everything's about how they treat me. Listen, more of what never satisfied will never satisfy. You can fill that ego forever and it'll never satisfy. And so the solution is this: God's power at work in me as I trust that his ways are best and take steps of obedience by faith. And I serve them in the marriage. I trust God. I make life about God and others, not self, because that's a small little world. I cut off what God calls sin. I can't even do this. I can't get there. I'm not ashamed of the power of God, the gospel of God. It's the power of God unto salvation. It changes how I live. You have more power. Listen, Christian, this is it. You have more power in Christ than you can fathom. You take off your crown. You lay down your crown. Let his kingdom come. He rules, he reigns. Take steps of faith as he leads. Watch what he does. I get to see it. Like from up above, watching as you live for Jesus. It's amazing. You have, present tense, more power. You're living in a fallen world, but you're a redeemed man or woman if you know Jesus. And you get to live in it and watch restoration start taking